Hello everyone and welcome to Toy Power. This is your podcast where we talk toys and all things pop culture. And today I'm joined by Ben, Darren and Frank. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, hey, good to be here.
Thank you very much.
Welcome, yeah, everyone to this awesome podcast. And yeah, let Trent take you over to the news.
We've had a lot of sensational news. And I know just talking to some of the guys, we've tried to temper our responses to this because we maybe take it with a pinch of salt. But we want to talk a little bit about Masters of the Universe because there's been a lot happening in the last couple of days. The biggest piece of information we've got is that Sony has come out and given the Masters of the Universe reboot or motion picture a release date. And that date, and I'm going from memory and I'm probably going to get it wrong, but it's 19 December 2019. Yeah. So it's essentially 2.5 years away. The other bit of news that came out of that announcement was that McGee is out from a directing point of view. So he was the latest director attached and was very passionate about the project. No director currently attached, which is probably not great news to take it forward. But the other bit of interesting news is they've got David S. Goyer, who's been put on as writer. So he probably comes along as about the fifth or sixth writer that's been attached to Masters over the years. So, and look, he comes with some great credentials. You know, you just look to films like The Dark Knight and Batman Begins, Man of Steel,
Blade. With Wesley Snipes. I think he's probably the most established writer that's been announced for this property so far as a live-action film. I mean, Chris Yost, I think, also was... you know, had a lot of potential. Obviously, the two Thor sequels for Marvel. But David S. Goyer probably has an even deeper catalogue with, like, that goes all the way back to things like Wesley Snipes' Blade, some of the best movies to come out of the last 10, 15 years, in my mind, like The Dark Knight, Batman Begins, Man of Steel. Someone who's got a really good grasp with comic and fantasy-based properties could really bring some great sensibilities to this.
Yeah, I think Batman project. I think Batman Begins in particular, because that was the one where you take the concept of a man dressing up as a bat, which at face level can be silly, and after the train wreck it was the Joel Schumacher Batman films, you go, oh, how do you make Batman cool again? This is one of the guys who was part of the architect behind that, and the same could be said for the Master of the Universe franchise. So, look, I think it's all good news, and I think what Trent was alluding to about us tempering our expectations is that anyone who's been following this project for any length of time knows that we've been down this road before. They've changed directors that many times. They've had multiple different screenwriters who come and go. I don't know that there was ever an actual release date set. They would say that we're aiming for 2015 or a year, but this is the first time they've given a firm release date. Even then, if you sort of into following upcoming movies and that doesn't mean much because films get pushed back or cancelled all the time, even when they do have a firm release date. So we'll see. I think everyone here and you guys listening would love to see it happen.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, watch this space kind of thing.
Yeah, and I was just talking a little bit off air on The Dark Tower. I'm hugely anticipating Stephen King's Dark Tower movie adaptation that's going to be coming. And, you know, that's had a number of changes to release dates. The filming has wrapped long ago. We still haven't seen a trailer. I think a trailer leaked back in December and it got pulled. So, you know, and that's a Sony picture. So I guess there's some of the things that can happen. Sony probably hasn't got the best track record at the moment with some of the reception to films that they've done. So, look, hopefully Sony see this Master of the Universe picture as being potentially the start of a franchise or a series of films that they can draw on and they put enough time, love and effort into making it something competitive. Because there's a lot of great superhero action adventure kind of films out there at the moment. What do we think in terms of getting, we talked a bit about David S. Goyer and the tone he set in Batman Begins. one of the things that I take out of that reboot was they took Batman, and I guess the latest film representation prior to that was your Joel Schumacher, which I guess didn't get received well by fans. He really took it in a new direction of making Batman really real world. How would this character integrate in a fairly real world, not as over the top as some of the Tim Burton and Schumacher stuff prior to that? What do we think that means tonally for Batman, for Masters potentially?
Yeah, so
I think you've got to bear in mind, sorry to cut you off, Ben. In fact, you go first.
So personally, I'd like to see a Guardians of the Galaxy style Master of the Universe film, right? So I feel that was the perfect mix of sci-fi and what I'm alluding to is I'd be happy enough to take my young kid to who's between 10 and 15, and it's not too dark for them to see. Yeah. My concern is if they make it too dark and make it sort of too adultish, which it'd still be awesome for us adults.
Yeah.
You're not going to see toys on the major retailers. Mm. Right, so I'm sure there'll still be toys regardless. As I've said in previous podcasts, I work in a supermarket. I see kids coming into the store in their shopping trolleys carrying Ninja Turtles, carrying around Transformers. I want to see kids running around with Skeletor. Stuff He-Man. I want a kid running around.
Sacrilege.
He's a villain after all.
I want to see a kid running around holding a Masters of the Universe figure that their parents are comfortable to buy for a child that's at a young age. I don't want the movie to be too dark and not have a influence on in the toy shelves, because it essentially is a toy based property. So that's my two cents anyway. Whether it goes from this sort of a Thor Guardians of the Galaxy route, that's my ideal way.
I think that's a really interesting point, and I keep thinking when you talk about that, about what, and I know he's not the brand manager anymore, but what Scott Knight like said, and I tend to think that probably was where Mattel were at back then, and I suspect they're at that same point again, that they really see the film as a way to get back into mainstream retail. I cannot imagine an R-rated Master Universe film coming out.
No, but
or
tone,
even yeah. or even a tone that's too... You know, I think the challenge is going to be making sure it's all ages enough so that people who remember Master of the Universe from when they were young can go and see a film and enjoy it for what it is, while they don't feel it talks down to them and at the same time keeps the kids interested. I think Mattel realized that the future of this brand is absolutely the next generation, that we're kind of the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
And I think that the studios are well aware from Mattel's perspective about what they each want from this film. I would go back to... I'd like to go back to Trent's point that he made about the real world Batman Begins. And I think it's a really interesting thing about how that would mesh with Master Universe. I guess I think, you know, if you look a bit deeper into David S. Goyer's catalogue, you start to see things like Man of Steel. And I'm picturing the scenes in... on Krypton and that and Blade as well, and it's not so hard to see a real world mixed with heavily fantasy based stuff.
But it's a series. I mean, those films, and they have been created. Look at Man of Steel. I mean, Man of Steel was criticised, and a lot of the stuff DC have done have been compared to Marvel and been criticised for being too serious. There are two directions they can go in, and I know some of the previous directors and writers on the Masters project touched on things like Guardians as tonal influences. Others have touched on Game of Thrones. Now, I know, seriously, when they talk about Game of Thrones, they're not talking about having nudity and violence.
It's the grittiness
But it's the realism or bring these characters back to how they would. There's a lot of politics in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is tonally, you know, Lord of the Rings... that had a huge toy line. Toy Biz attached a huge toy line to Lord of the Rings, yet it was a serious take, a mature take, even though it was a film that was aimed for all ages, in a sense.
Sort of like a mature take on Star Wars. You know, like Star Wars is very serious in itself. I what I don't want to see, and this is just my personal opinion, is the slapstick we saw in the Ninja Turtles. I think it's a little bit more mature than that, and I as much as a Transformer fan I am, I not a huge fan of the Bayverse movies. I think they Michael Bay put his sort of
explosions.
he put his expression on the Transformers, and so did everyone else in the creative point. But it took away from my Transformers. I can see the insight in why Bumblebee is a Corvette instead of a Volkswagen. I can stomach that. I don't like Optimus Prime though. Why he had to be a long nose truck and not a short nose truck, and just, they're too complex. Like, you can go from a simple, you know, it just, they just don't, look at the core story and media, and don't try and create your own universe. You know, with so much source material, don't try and add new things in, elements that are unnecessary.
I think the tonal, you mentioned the tonal stuff about, you know, Guardians and stuff, and I think one of the things that gets lost with He-Man, though, you mentioned Game of Thrones, and that's comes from that, you know, sort of, it's the barbaric part of it, where it's all, you know, muscly guys and big heavy swords and stuff. One of the things that sort of gets a little bit lost is, you know, there's this heavy emphasis on the sorcery stuff, but then there's also the technology side. Yeah. Like, they had all this magic, and, you know, Skeletor zaps you with the Havoc staff and all this stuff. But then they had these, like, amazing flying vehicles and all this sort of, you know, laser guns and all that sort of stuff. And I think that's something the original movie tried to do a little bit with, you know, the cosmic key and these sorts of things. And I think if you go that really grounded, gritty stuff, then I think you lose that part of it. And so whereas something like Guardians is more sci-fi, I think you still need to have that both magic and technology in it. And what that lends itself to is color, particularly for anyone who's seen Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. How colorful was that as
absolutely,
a movie?
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, and again, we're talking about a movie that didn't spend a single, well, apart from the opening scene, but didn't spend any time on Earth. It was all off-world, and, you know, we're talking things like Eternia and these sorts of places. You want it to be colourful, and you mentioned, Trent, about the criticism that DC gets. I don't know that a lot of that is necessarily to do with David Goyer as a writer. It's more that it looks like the whole thing's been shot in shadows, and that's more sort of geared towards the director and the cinematography as opposed to the writing material. Don't get me wrong, they do take themselves pretty seriously when you're actually talking about, you know, flying guys in capes and that sort of thing. But I think, the biggest problem I see going forward for a Masters movie is the names. And I know that's sort of controversial to say, but even, you know, Manny Faces, Man at Arms, and all those sorts of names.
I think Fisto is going to be the one to hardest. In today's society, when you'll get people that
had a very different meaning when I was young, just so we're clear.
And you'll get the people that remember He-Man, that remember Man at Arms and things, but then you'll get the people that, like, Fisto's in it, really? and then there'll be memes about it to the world's content. And it's almost to the point where Fisto will be better off not in the movie because of that fact. A bit, you know,
skip that.
And you see it with Batman, you know, they did the new 52 and all of a sudden Batman didn't have the sort of the underpant design anymore. And Superman, they're gearing him up for what he might look like in a film. And Scott, I think with his bios, if you think about classics that started in 2008, there was this kind of real name concept.
I love that. That's where I was going.
You could see that he was positioning it to say, look, he doesn't have to be called Fisto. He can be, you know, Man at Arms can be Duncan. I know Man at Arms isn't controversial, but he can be Duncan. Yeah. And he's mainly Duncan, he's referred to. So you can get away with the names. You can take some liberties. I think you can call them for a film. Fisto can be something different.
I think the other challenge might well be trademarks as well. I mean, can you even use the Fisto term with Kit Fisto in Star Wars?
They were able to use it in the Classics line. They weren't in 2002. I know they weren't.
But I wondered if that was because that was a less mainstream line at the time that they got away with it.
Kit Fisto is probably, that trademark might have elapsed.
Yeah, might have. That's true.
And I guess the other thing from a story point of view is you go, all right, I think the big thing, which I kind of think they have to go one way, but do you go old school where He-Man's just a dude? He is always He-Man, or do you go the transformation Prince Adam filmation style? Well, because when you ask the average person on the street, oh yeah, didn't he hold the sword up and he turned from a wimp?
That's all they remember. Yeah,
that's what they remember.
That's what they remember.
Then all things come out of the woodworks. Does Battle Cat talk? You know, how much does Orko play a part in it?
You do Battle Cat like Groot. He just growls and He-Man knows exactly what he's saying.
Yeah, well, cool.
Well, that's how 2000.
There's things you can do.
Did it. But then again, you look at Guardians and you think about, Rocket Raccoon, and you know everyone except he can talk.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not making a case one way or the other, because I think strong cases can be made for Battle Cat to not talk.
I think it all comes back to the writing. If you make this character serious, the audience will take it seriously.
Yeah.
If you make this character a slapstick comedy, relief,
that's how they'll take it.
My biggest concern is Orko becomes the next Jar Jar Binks. Yeah. That's my biggest worry. Yeah. You know, that it'll just be and it'll take away from the overall story.
And I think
there's a legitimate risk there. I think Orko, a lot of it will come down, if Orko is featured and how he's written, a lot of it will come down to who the voice actor is and the kind of voice they give him.
For sure.
He could become the next Jar Jar if they're not careful about it. Mm. And the franchise doesn't really have the latitude right now to be able to afford a Jar Jar Binks the way Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace could sort of take that and you know, suffer the indignity that comes with it, but still thrive as a franchise.
They were always going to produce 2 and 3afterwards.
But
I still think it's very important that an adult of my age or a little bit older and such can take their kids when they're,
I don't think there's any concerns there, because Mattel will have a lot of influence over this, and their main priority is to sell toys, to get it back into the mainstream.
If this can get it back into the mainstream, if I can bring out new toy lines, because they're probably thinking more than just a film line, if at least a new animation and, you know, toy lines associated with that, then the Mattel will be very, very happy. Mm. They will not want, you know, an M15.
To your point, Ben, where you talked about, you know, you see kids running around with Turtles and running around with Transformers and stuff, and I get the same thing as a big Turtles fan. People are like, oh, you must love the new Michael Bay movies. I'm like, not really. But the part that brings me joy is to see these kids who know can pick Leonardo, Donatello, pick the difference between all the Turtles, and they know the characters. Yeah. I'm like, do you know what? It's not the Turtles I grew up with, but it's never going to be that, because these kids are 30 years younger.
And it also, it keeps a household name.
Yeah.
It's a segue that you've got the mass release for the kids and things like that on toy shelves, but then you've got an adult line being made for a smaller production line for people like us. Yeah. And with all the companies out there at the moment, there's bound to be other companies trying to make a buck on the side to release a third party version of something vintage style, like Mondo's doing with the Turtle line and things. I'm sure that someone will be like, let's get on to him. Let's get on to Master Universe.
Blowing up.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's a bit of that happening already. I mean, Mondo have got the He-Man figures coming out, and you know, we've seen the pop culture stuff and the bus. So there is a bit of a market for that now. So I think a film would only crank that up.
Mm.
Yeah, and I look to, I mean, the film, like you said, it might not be your cup of tea as Masters fans. I think we have to brace ourselves that this might not be the film for us. But the key part is opening it up to a new generation of fans that get into it, and that, like you said, can create new avenues. I mean, look at what DC are putting out now in terms of some of their, you know, 4 animated feature-length films every year. You know, we're getting a lot of retelling of some of the classic Dark Knight Returns story arcs, or Killing Joke and that sort of stuff. So it opens, having it in the mainstream and having people wanting to do it means it will open up potentially to something that's more to our taste potentially down the tracks.
Yeah, for sure.
And because we've got those animated movies, we've got animated toys from the movies.
Yeah,
so then,
exactly.
You know, that's a hand-in-hand association.
It just opens it up. So I think the best thing we as Masters fans can ask for is that the film is a success, whatever it takes to be a success.
Absolutely. The way I see it, and I said it to Ben earlier tonight, you know, I would rather a film that I don't like and Trent will attest to this probably more than anyone, that I'm incredibly soft with properties that I'm close to. I have a blind spot, I guess, and I can forgive an awful lot. I enjoy the first Turtles movie, for example. I enjoy the Michael Bay stuff. I enjoy stuff about the Schumacher Batman films. So I can be incredibly forgiving with a lot of things and get enough out of something. But for me, the most important thing is that it's a success. You can always reboot it later. Down the track, someone might come up with something that does, fit your vision of Master Universe down the track. But if it is not a financial success, then I think, we have some serious questions as fans to ask about whether or not this is going to be a property we can hand down to the next generation or not. The way we have with Turtles, Transformers, and obviously DC and Marvel and Star Wars and some of those, or whether or not this is something that is going to, really belong just to our generation. And that would be incredibly tragic if that's the case. I really want to see this mainstream again. I really want to see it thrive and do well. And on that note, I think it is an absolute must that the film title must include He-Man in the name. And I'll give some background to that. So many people I talk to have no idea what I'm talking about when I say Master of the Universe. And you've probably already seen it on my Facebook page a million times whenever I share art or article or anything or have any discussion at all. I always talk about Master of the Universe by its title. And then also put Aka, He-Man, and She-Ra. So people know what I'm actually banging on about, that are not into toys and pop culture. Because it is something that people remember very fondly as He-Man.
Yeah.
And I think that it would lose a tremendous amount of brand recognition. I can, I can remember some people, going out to dinner. We went to some people I work with. We went to see Captain America, Winter Soldier, back when that was on at cinemas. And we were talking, four of us went out. We were talking after the film at dinner, but three of us were talking about how we wanted the Masters of the Universe film. I started that ball rolling. I was the one who really passionately wants it. Two others agreed. The other one said she had no idea what we were talking about. She said she was too young. It just wasn't her. 5 minutes later, she said, you know what would be really cool? A He-Man movie. and she wondered why we were all laughing at it after that. But someone else saw, my collection, heard me banging on about Master of the Universe and had no idea what I was talking about, or saw parts of my collection and had no idea and was just like totally went over her head. But then she saw He-Man and she remembered He-Man.
I remember that guy,
And thought of it as He-Man, like that was its name. The people outside the fan base, generally speaking, unless they were hardcore fans as children, do not remember it as Master of the Universe. They remember it as He-Man. Mm. You'll sell a lot more tickets if that's in the name, in my view. A lot more.
I think you're right. I agree with you 100%. Whether it's in the name, whether it's almost in the subtext to the name, but whether they promote it via the trailers or via the posters or via the medium, that has to come out. And that clearly will come out. So I'm not sure where they're going to go with the name, but that's a great suggestion. I think it's got a lot of merit. We might just move on to a bit more Masters news. So we've had an announcement during the week. I think Brian Flynn did his second episode of the Supercast, which gave us some information on what's happening with the Ultimates. So they're the five figures that we pre-ordered sort of at the start of the year. So they look like they'll be shipping out on the 31st of June. I think Brian might have mentioned that the end of May is when they'll start getting the shipments from the factory. So, but he was saying basically 31st of May.
31st of June or 30th?
June. Well, June doesn't have 31 days.
That's what I thought.
But I'm just I'm reading off.
That's a great shipping day.
Gives them a bit of flexibility.
It does.
It's like the 1st of October. If anyone knows that Dr. Seuss book. So end of June, that'll be coming out.
I can't wait.
The other thing that's been announced is May 5th will be the date you can actually go on and pre-order Wave 1 of the Classics. So that's the wave. I might need a bit of help just to.
Yep.
It's
the hawk.
The
hawk. Dolora, yeah.
Fangor.
Yeah, Fangor and.
Quake,
yeah. And we've got one other.
Loader. So that's that wave. So you'll be able to go May 5th. I think they're talking about being able to do payment plans as well to spread out the cost of those across that time. So that's pretty cool. It's worth a watch. If you haven't seen Brian's episode yet of the Supercast, it's a lot of great information. He's done it in a very nice and quite funny, quite entertaining way. There's a lot of animation and graphics that pop up as well.
I like Brian's style, I've just got to say. Yeah, I think sometimes Fresh Blood is a good thing, and you can see that he's got a passion for the line and the franchise, and I just think that carries through. I think, you know, Scott gets a lot of hard time, and he did some great things with it as well, but sometimes Fresh Blood, fresh perspective, and that can do a line well, and that, just hoping that Super 7 can get a deal done and get the Shearer animated characters license and the 1987 Master Universe motion picture license, because that'd just, can you imagine our collections if those things came into it?
Yeah, I think we're all looking forward to that. I think from Brian and Super 7's point of view, they just want to get some figures out to us.
You know? I understand that.
They're focused on.
I understand that's core business for them right now.
And on a segue of Brian's thing, he's a great salesman as such, selling the Alien blind boxes. And damn, I wanted that big Aliens version of the Big Chap. So he's got not only the Alien version, but the Aliens one as well. And
get the impression they were doing the Alien version. I thought that was the original Big
Chap.
So
they're doing
the Aliens,
so
right?
They've re-released the Big Chap for an exorbitant amount of money, because of 1979, we're talking long ago. Yeah. So they have done an accurate representation of the Big Chap.
Right.
And now, on top of that, just to make your wallet cry even worse, they've made an Aliens Big Chap.
Yeah.
And he even pointed out all the different parts that they've... changed over
fingers,
to make it,
the
the fingers, the back, things that come out, and the head sculpt, and and he plays with them at the end. He's a child at heart, just like us.
Yeah.
That's why it works. It's in good hands.
He's done it very, very well, for sure.
The other bit of news, I know there are a few pictures floating around. Ben, you shot some around when they appeared sort of online of a single carded Horde Trooper. I know back in the day, when Mattel still had the line, they had images. I think it was around General Sundar, and they said, look, we're also doing a single-carded Horde Trooper, and then that all went quiet. But it sounds like that has been done, and
it just never made it to Maddie.
Not quite in time. So now we're looking at, I think, this coming Monday being the 1st of May. They're talking about the Mattel site having that single-carded Horde Trooper available for sale. It looks like a clean version of the Horde Trooper. If I'm looking, there are a couple of different pictures on the website. One had the battle damage blast, but the photo in the card looks 100% clean and unbattle damaged, so just like the original figure. So with a bit of luck,
all the parts and things,
looks
weapons,
like it comes with the four
shield,
the original sort of blaster bow that came with the original figure, plus the crossbow, plus the shield, plus the filmation sort of laser zapper thing. But yeah, I guess for international fans, unfortunately, the bad news is that the Mattel website only ships to the US. So if you're an international fan, you don't really have an option to get this one shipped to you. So that is sort of the negative of it being delayed past the closure of the Matty Collector website.
It's really sad, and it's a really sad note for a line that was on that website for 8 years to go out on, in my view. To sort of go out with such a whimper that it's almost sort of dumped on the Maddie website and the Mattel website, after Maddie's wound up and, you know, being offered with fairly small amount of fanfare. I know they have spoken with Val Staples at He-Man.org about it, but fairly small fanfare compared to what you'd expect if it was debuting on say, Maddie Collector back in the day. It just seems like a sad end, not only to the Master Universe Classics at Matty Collector era, but also the Matty Collector era in more broader terms, because it's, you know, essentially, I guess, their final product, but they're not around for it.
So I was just going to ask, not being super familiar with the Classics line, is this other than the fact he's an army build type figure, is there any reason why it's the Horde Trooper? Like, was he one of the last ones released?
The reason is because when the two-pack... they released the Horde Trooper two-pack in 2014, 15 or something like that.
So there were two in a one.
Okay. Two in a pack. You had one battle damage with a few little blaster holes, you know, like paint apps on him, and the other one was clean.
Yeah.
And so everyone got super excited because, you know, it's the Horde Trooper. Like, yeah. it's the original army iconic, builder.
Yeah.
However, they didn't make enough and they sold out very quickly. Like, we're talking back in the day where 2 or 3 minute sellouts.
Wow.
And it was a lot of people missed out because some people went online and got 10, others didn't even get one. And then as immediately straight away eBay
$200
ridiculous. The good thing was subscribers were guaranteed to get as many as they subscribed for. So I got my one. I was fortunate enough to get another one, so I've got four. But now with the on the flip side, we've got the single one coming out. We got a insight into this about 3 or 4 months ago when one appeared on eBay and it was shared around the Masters community on Facebook and things. Is this real? Is this not? It went for an exorbitant price because no one knew what it was and things. And everyone was nitpicking, you know, look, that can't molding of the plastic doesn't look right, you know, it doesn't look quite up to Mattel's quality and things, and no one was to know. And now
there's even some speculation that it might have been a prototype for an up-and-coming Super 7 release.
Correct, very correct, yes. And now, in hindsight, they've given us 2 weeks notice that it's coming out, so it doesn't really give, like, for myself, I need a little bit more time. I would love to buy 4 more. I've got quite a collection of the vintage Horde Troopers, and they're very passionate about them, and just to give 2 weeks notice, hey look, this is coming out, plus we can't ship to Australia, so you know, I'll be lucky enough to get one, and I'll be happy just to get that single card, and I'll probably keep it on card because it's easier to contain. But it's frustrating that short turnaround, limited shipping avenues, wrong, you know, different sites.
And is there any indication of like numbers?
No, they never do. Never do. So it could sell out in 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah.
You know.
Could very well be. Yeah, yeah. I suspect.
Yeah,
it's just come out. It's a legacy of what they were organizing at the time.
Yeah, we don't know how far along in production they were when they decided, no, we're not doing this. Maddie's not happy. Whether or not they got the complete Maddie quota that they intended to put on Maddie, or where they got to.
And I think it's a dig at Super 7 as well, that they've got the Masters, you know, license. They're producing the classics, and they're not even the distributors of it. So
this is coming direct from Mattel, not Super 7.
From Mattel's website. Oh. Yeah.
It's a Mattel product. It would be branded Mattel.
Yeah.
The print run would have, you know, had the Mattel logo. There's probably issues with them giving it to Super 7.
And I suspect Super 7 have probably known about this a long time before. Even when they were in negotiations to pick up the license. One thing I would add is I think this is a perfect candidate for an Ultimate Edition figure down the road. I think there's a lot Super 7 could do with it in the Ultimate Editions. Obviously, it'll look beautiful in the vintage-style packaging, but you could offer all the same weapons you're offering now, plus you could offer the alternate heads that came with General Sundar, and you could make a really nice Ultimate Editions figure that that fans would go ape for. And
one battle damage chest, one clean one.
Oh, yeah, well, you could do that. You could do lots of things with it. I'm hoping we haven't seen the last of Horde Troopers.
Yeah, and look, I think
Master Universe Classics.
If we do get a 2-3 minute sellout, I suspect it'll be on the cards. If it lingers for months and months, that might factor in on how Super 7 see it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's a no-brainer to me because this is the sort of thing that, like Ben said, he might want 4, he might only be able to get 1 now.
I don't see it lingering.
But in time, you'll pick up more. These are the sorts of things that will move.
Exactly. I don't see it lingering. I think even if people feel that it's been sprung on them and they haven't budgeted for it, if it's there in 2 weeks' time when people get paid again, they'll buy more.
Yeah.
It's just that kind of item, and it's historic. Whether or not you are happy about the fact that it's not available to us, or whether or not you're happy about the fact it's not a Maddie collector Collector.com. It is effectively the last Masters Universe Classics Matty Collector produced figure. I mean, it's historical in that regard. So I don't see it being a online virtual peg warmer.
Yeah. No, very good. Well, that probably wraps up our news segment on Masters.
Keep up. No, just about Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah.
International Free Comic Book Day is next Saturday. Saturday, May the 6th. Really recommend if people are interested in that and available, they get along to it. It's always a fun day. Obviously, you know, comic shops, you know, offer free comics depending on the store as to what the, you know, quantity is per person. But there's a vibe and an atmosphere that goes beyond just the free comics.
Yeah.
A lot of people in cosplay, just a real sense of enthusiasm for these properties. And given, you know, where Marvel and DC are in terms of their pop culture stakes in cinemas and Blu-ray and DVD stores, I think, you know, it's just feels like it's getting bigger and bigger and a bit more mainstream every year. And
accepted as well.
Certainly a lot more accepted. And there's nothing like it. The one day of the year that you see superheroes and supervillains running down Rundle Mall. For people that live in Adelaide, that's the main shopping strip or district in Adelaide. So there's just nothing like it. So definitely worth people getting along to. And I think it's a bit unique in that it's one of those events that, you know, a lot of people in different corners of the globe can participate in. Because it's an international event.
Mm. Yeah, and I'm looking forward to it. Very good. At that point, we'll head over to our next segment, which is our new character spotlight. And today we thought it would be appropriate to take a look at, well, everyone's favorite Transformer. He's so lovable.
He's not a Decepticon for starters.
We're talking about Bumblebee. So we thought we'd, shine the light on Bumblebee this time around. We've got the next iteration of the Bayverse Transformers movie coming out last night. So that sort of gives us a bit of a flavor. So I'll hand over at this point to Ben to take us through a bit of background on Bumblebee.
Excellent. All right. So now, in starting with our spotlight on the Transformers Autobot character, Bumblebee, I will mainly focus on his four unique toy incarnations released in the Generation 1 form. So the first and arguably the most iconic Bumblebee toy was released as a mini-bot in 1984 in the common and familiar yellow colour scheme, but also released in red. His transformation was famously based on a Volkswagen Beetle. The Beetle toy actually hails from the Microchange toy line, in which he was known as a Penny Racer, along with many other familiar Series 1 mini-bots. His overall toy appearance wasn't too different from his deception in the cartoon. However, his face sculpt had been vastly changed. The toy sports a single-eyed robot visor with a large mouth plate. The cartoon sported a more humanoid-looking face. And the horns are there in the toy. Yep, you can see them. Yep. So the second toy version of B was a little bit more interesting backstory that I would like to talk about before I continue on with the actual toy itself. So my story starts in issue number 1 of the G.I. Joe and the Transformers comic book crossover that was released in September 1986. Through a series of events, the Joes actually destroyed Bumblebee, mistaking him as the enemy. He is later on rebuilt in the comics and dubbed Goldbug. Goldbug is a much more mature version of Bumblebee. Just like his name, he is now a goldish colour scheme as opposed to his original bright yellow. This Throttlebot toy version of Goldbug, released in 1988... No, I don't have the number here. I've deleted it, unfortunately. I think it's 1988. Still transformed into a Volkswagen Beetle, but it is actually more realistically proportioned than the original mini-bot car design. The Goldbug toy head sculpt was based directly on that of Bumblebee's original toy design. The third toy version was released in 1989 under the title Classic Pretenders Bumblebee. The inner robot version of Bumblebee was still a yellow Volkswagen Beetle, but now has what look like off-road tires. Oddly, the robot's head was moulded after Cliffjumper's toy head, which actually more resembles B's cartoon face. So the fourth and final toy in the actual toy is the Action Master Bumblebee, released in 1990. This version of Bumblebee is a non-transforming action figure that mixed cartoon model with toy detail. His face sculpt closely resembles the toy cartoon face. This release makes Bumblebee the only character to have a toy of some kind available during the entire original Transformers production run from 1984 through to 1990. Now, continuing on B's many toy incarnations, there are two more I'd like to spotlight before I hand over the mic to the other lads. The G2 version of Bumblebee, released in 1983, shared the same sculpt as his original Series 1 mini bot counterpart. However, this version has a nice shiny goldish finish. Almost back metal.
Yeah.
And there's and I noted there's no chipping or you know, anything of that back metal. Yeah. They're all
looks nice.
Yeah. And now wrapping up my spotlight, Takara re-released Bumblebee in a mini bot collection 6-pack in 2004 as part of their Book Box collection, which featured him with a newly tooled cartoon accurate face sculpt, sporting bright blue eyes. Additionally, this version of the figure gave Bumblebee both an Autobot symbol and a rub sign. The regular symbol is stationed on his traditional location on his chest, and relocating the rub sign to the back of his head, replacing the original tech detailing sticker that was previously been there. That's a wrap from me. Now over to Frank, I believe.
Yeah, I'm just going to talk about Bumblebee from a sort of post G1 thing. I think Ben's covered that really well, up to the what most people would consider the vintage G1 stuff. What's interesting with Bumblebee is he cops a lot of flack in the Transformers community currently. Is, oh, guess what? They're releasing another Bumblebee. Yay! Like, we've only got 50 million of them. But post G1, he pretty much didn't have a figure up until sort of Michael Bay made him sort of front and center in 2007. There was nothing in Beast Wars, Armada, Energon, Cybertron, all those lines through the early 2000s up until, up until 2007. There was one in Armada that was sort of often mistaken, which is actually Hot Shot, which is their take on Hot Rod, basically. And he was bright yellow, sort of sports car type thing. And people would, and he was, again, characterized by that, the young bot who would get them into trouble because he acts without thinking kind of thing. So you could say that was a version of him. Yeah, so it was really, you know, as much as people have their opinions about Michael Bay and what he did for Transformers, he obviously went back to the original source material and just went, Bumblebee's in an awful lot of these episodes, let's make him front and center. And unlike, say, Optimus Prime, where he's Optimus Prime as a character, excuse me, I'm not very well today, it's largely unchanged. Heck, it's even Peter Cullen's voice after all these years, you know. Whereas Bumblebee, they went, all right, let's try something different. You've taken him from this little scout-sized, in the G1 cartoon, of course, he was the size of a human. So he was that sort of link between the robot and the human worlds, because he would get around with Spike and get into trouble and stuff, and he was more relatable because of that. And they took that and went, you know what, in the Michael Bay universe, he's a warrior. He's you know, he's Prime's right hand kind of thing. To the point where, fast forwarding into a few years, you got the animated toy line, where he was actually given stingers. I think both his fists would be replaced by these stingers, and, you know, following the name, which I thought was quite cool. He also features heavily in the Transformers Prime series that came after that, which was very much molded on the, you know, my voice box is damaged kind of Bumblebee. And you look at the current Transformers cartoon, the RID, Robots in Disguise stuff, he's the boss. There's no Optimus Prime in that show, although I think they introduce him in later seasons. But Bumblebee's the leader of the team. And you look at all that, and you look at where he's come from as this little sort of, not a joke character, but like a sort of minor player. And you go, do you know what? What's interesting is you look back at the 86 movie and you go, well, they really positioned Hot Rod to be takeover from Prime. Bumblebee has. Bumblebee is what Hot Rod should have been.
Yep, well called.
You know?
He should have had the Matrix.
Yeah. To the point where there's
Bumbletron.
Bumblebee Prime. Yeah. Bumble Prime, yeah. you know, to the point where we're now talking about a Bumblebee spin-off movie. Where's Hot Rod's movie? I believe he's going to be in the Last Night, from what I've seen a few pictures of that sort of stuff. Yeah, so it's really interesting. And to the point where in 2010, Hasbro actually started a Transformers Hall of Fame. And the idea was that they would pick 4 characters each year, and then a 5th one would be fan voted and say, right, these are, you know, Hall of Fame, untouchable, blah, blah, blah. The first, anyone want to take a stab at the first 4 characters?
Optimus Prime,
yep. Megatron, Soundwave.
Nope.
Unacceptable.
Yeah, like, pretty sure he got in the next year.
Starscream?
Yeah.
Yeah. Prowl?
No. Who have we just been talking about?
Hot Rod?
Bumblebee.
Oh, that's cool. The point. So I was thinking he was the 5th, maybe.
The 5th one with the fan vote one was Grimlock.
Right, which, cool. Yeah, which of I was course. Like, okay, yep. I'll pay. Yeah,
but the fact that Hasbro said these are the 4 and Bumblebee was one of them, to me, that's just like, all right, they realize he's now one of these core characters. He's, you know, he's part of that initial 4. You can't have a Shredder without Splinter. You can't have an Optimus without Bumblebee type thing. Like. Yep. So I thought that was really cool. Of course, with the movie stuff, there's so many Bumblebee figures. It's ridiculous. Probably one of the best ones that I've seen is the, I think I call it the Human Alliance line, which comes from the 2nd movie, the Revenge of the Fallen. And it's what you'd term as a Voyager size figure. So you're sort of talking 6 to 7 inches, quite large, quite detailed. And to the point where when you transform it, you actually get a little Shia LaBeouf figure that actually sits inside of it and stuff. And you look at it, and it's one of those toys that comes packaged in car mode, and it was hard to find because Kmart's or whatever that was stocking it would go, oh, I'm going to put this with the Hot Wheels section because it looks like a model car, you know? The reason, Ben, you mentioned about the licensing as far as that he was a Camaro as opposed to no longer a V-dub, that was obviously VW were very much against having their brand associated with war machines for historical reasons.
Also, aside from knowing that, I see that as a developmental.
Yeah.
It's, you know, they're putting this guy in at the start of the movie. He's sort of the first character you're associated with. You want it to be a cool car, you know. Yeah. Like,
It makes sense.
Aside from my passion and my G1, you know, yeah,
that's what we grew up with.
I can understand that. So I understand that, you know, Volkswagen not, you know, wanting to do that, and also Michael Bay deciding, you know, look, let's get a cool car.
Yeah, the first movie, when you look at it, is a tale of a boy in his car. Yeah,
exactly, yeah. Exactly. First car. Yeah, and they do make reference to the Volkswagen.
Yeah, there is a little cameo at the car yard and stuff.
So
there's something about that film, even though I'm not the biggest hardcore Michael Bay Transformers film either, there's something about it. I think I've talked to Trent about it before. Maybe it's because I have a nostalgic sense for the source material, but I can remember just that feeling. And I'm not the hardcore Transformers fan that a lot of people are, but I still consider myself a fan. But there's something about just being in the cinema that first time I saw it and seeing on the big screen, you know, even just some of the scenes with Optimus and some of the Autobots standing together and just thinking, wow, you know, here I am. You know, it's 2007, there's a live-action Transformers film. These iconic characters are now part of cinema history. I know we had the animated film before.
Yeah.
A lot of the G1 characters aren't in that... A lot of the iconic ones aren't in that film for long because plays out. Not to want to give spoilers for the 1986 animated film, but they're not. But yeah, it was just something that felt very cool about it. And I remember coming away thinking, I really enjoyed this film. It was nothing like I grew up with, but I really enjoyed it. And I remember probably feeling a little bit less like that each time they brought out a sequel for each one of them. But something about the first one I still have a soft spot for, even though I know it's, you know, it's not really the best Transformers film. It's just great seeing them all on screen together, and that was worth something.
Yeah,
I probably would have done something different with the sequels and added a bit more substance. And, you know, less humans.
Mm. Probably no, not, definitely
not a popular thing, but I'd love a prequel on Cybertron.
Mm. I don't think we'll ever see. I think as long as, and this comes is getting a bit Hollywood historical thing, the movie almost has to have humans in it because
yeah, otherwise I know,
they're not going to touch
the draw
it.
Card.
It's yeah,
the
yeah,
draw
yeah,
card.
No.
It's the drama. I think even this latest one, there was talk that Mark Wahlberg finally gets like a love interest, and I'm like, why?
Yeah.
I don't care if Mark Wahlberg gets the girl at the end of the day. That shouldn't be what these movies are about. But it seems to be this historical thing.
They make a ton of money.
Every successful movie has a romance factor.
I know we're getting off topic here, but the trailer grabbed me when I saw Guardians or some latest movie I've seen. That in the sense that I took away from it that the Autobots are the enemies in the movie. So
there's scenes in it where Prime and Bumblebee are fighting.
Yeah, so I thought that's cool. That's different. This is someone who's like, I've had enough of these Transformers. Yeah. I'll wait till it comes out on DVD or whatever and see it then. But that grabbed me, and I thought that if that's the way direction they got, however the story goes, that's pretty cool. You've done that right. You know, flipping the story around, but I think they make
a ton of money, and I'll tell you something. I've got work colleagues who you know, as I said before in another podcast, I'm a social worker. I work in a profession where I'm working with a lot of women. A lot of women love these films, and they take their kids to these films and their families, and they love these films. So you know, whatever we might think about them not being our Transformers that we grew up with, they have, crafted something that resonates with families. And I think Bumblebee's a big part of that. I think he's the entry point. He's often, because the story's about him, he's the most human of the Transformers. And certainly, you know, the Autobots, he's the one who bonds with humans. You know, I love Prime. This is not an attack on Prime. I love Prime, but he's the leader. He's the serious one. Bumblebee is the one that audiences connect with the same way that I think, you know, Sam Witwicky and characters from G1 did, you know, when we were young. You know, he's the entry point. He was in many ways the entry point back when we were kids.
Yeah, and
that is something that's been
consistent. That seems to have followed through ever since that 2007 movie in Transformers Animated. It's the same thing. He bonds with one of the first humans they encounter. Transformers Prime is the same thing. I'm still not sure how I feel about the whole I can't talk, but you're talking about like giant robots that can scan a vehicle going past and turn into it. They can't fix a friggin' voice box. I get it in the first movie and it really worked, but now it's gone. And I think actually in Transformers Prime, they only sort of went for 3 seasons. They do, by the sort of midpoint of the third season, one of the hooks is, oh my God, Bumblebee starts talking. And it's actually, I forget the guy's name, but he was Batman Beyond. He was the main, he was Batman.
Kevin Conroy.
Terry McGinnis is the character's name, but the voice actor's done
Will Freddy or Freddy? I forget his last name.
Maybe.
But yeah.
But yeah, so I think it's really interesting and maybe Jar Jar's not a great example, but the sort of lower tier character coming from G1 is now just this mass marketing machine, basically. They've done a few sort of trying, as much as there's the different iterations of all the, you know, Cybertron and all that sort of stuff, they have tried to do some more generic sort of, this is classics Bumblebee type thing, to use a Masters term. They did also one that was based on the IDW comics where he is the Camaro, but he's got a bit like Prowl. He's got the wings, the doors that act as wings out the back and stuff. And then of course there's the Masterpiece Bumblebee, which for anyone who's got that, that is what you grew up watching.
Yep.
And you know, a bit overpriced for considering the scale, but it looks bang on.
It comes with Spike though, in his little exosuit thing, and then they did Goldbug.
They did Goldbug,
and you can switch the faces out, so. Yep. That's pretty cool. You can have the toy or the cartoon accurate face, which I thought was a nice touch.
He comes with the jetpack as well, Goldbug.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't know that. Very cool.
I tell you what, we need to stop picking characters that are yellow for our character spotlight, because last time we did this was April.
That's very true. I hadn't thought of that. It's an underlying
theme.
Dick Tracy for the next one.
Like. And Buzz Off, I think.
Yeah, what a good choice.
Very good. Well, does that wrap up
I'd just probably like to say a little bit about Bumblebee from my background, I guess. I grew up with G1, as everyone else here did. I'm not as big a Transform fan as some people, but I still consider myself a fan and a big fan. It's just that some of the people I'm surrounded by are hardcore. You know, probably for them, you know, where Master Universe and Batman and DC and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are for them, Transformers probably resides above those for them. But I still remember getting my Bumblebee from Father Christmas or Santa in the stocking one Christmas, and I remember, you know, how happy I was. I knew him from the cartoon. It really resonated with me as a toy. It was the yellow iconic version, so it really struck a chord, and I still have that figure actually from childhood. And I'm also a really, really big fan of the Masterpiece figure. I think they've done a really, really good job with him as well. So they're probably my two favorite Bumblebees. One for nostalgia, because that was the entry, that was the gateway line, you know, for me, that was my Transformers line that I grew up with. I never connected with things like Beast Wars or Beast Machines or any of the things that followed. No disrespect to the fans who did, it just wasn't Transformers to me. He's actually a bit of a favorite, and perhaps more of a favorite than I was conscious of before we spotlighted him. He's certainly the entry point for people now, and I can see looking back, he's probably the entry point for our generation as well, because he plays such a big role in the cartoon, like he is now today for today's generation. And that's cool that, for all we say about Michael Bay, that he's retained that part of the property. He took that
little character and turned him into his own franchise.
He literally took our entry point, our gateway character, and made it the entry point or gateway character for today's generation. Yeah. And I think that's beautiful.
I just two things before we wrap up. Sorry. I thought it was really smart from a marketing point of view to make a tiny little character that probably only cost a couple of dollars at retail in the 80s, and that was an A-grade character in your collection. So if your parents weren't ready to spend $30 on Optimus Prime, but here's Bumblebee right next door to it, and you knew Bumblebee was an A-grade, and you could grab that, and your kid would be happy. So that was a good marketing point.
Certainly was.
You know, where other toy lines were all $1 value, so to speak. That was cool. Also, Darren, you had the original Bumblebee as a kid. I had Goldbug. Did you, Trent? I had the
original Bumblebee.
Right.
Yep.
Cool. Frank?
Yeah, I think I've picked it up as an adult. But as a kid, I had a number of the mini bots like Brawn and Outback and some of those ones, but not Bumblebee.
No, I didn't have. Yeah. I had a same deal.
I had a heap couple of Sea Spray.
But Goldbug, was the only one I had as a kid. Never had any of the others. So just interesting to. I just thought that was while on the fly. So.
Yeah, my memory of him was he was one of the main characters. I mean, having the toy and seeing him in the cartoon series, he was always a mainstay. And I was, in terms of my Transformers collection that I had as a kid, they were certainly not the deluxe ones. They were the mini bots and maybe a few of the other scale up. Like Wheeljack and that sort of thing. But yeah, he seemed to me like to be a core character.
Yeah.
A Volkswagen as well. Like it's a pretty iconic sort of vehicle.
Yeah. It is. And it's a very cool contrast to someone who, like Jazz, who was my very first Transformers toy, you know, the Porsche and the Volkswagen, and it's the Volkswagen that I guess, you know, becomes the super iconic character. Mm-hmm. It says a lot about, you know, heart. You know, Bumblebee's, you know, big on heart. He might be small in stature, but big on heart. And, you know, that's probably what's resonated with fans.
Cool. So, very cool.
Very good. Well, thanks for tuning in again if you've been listening. It's always great to have your company. And, check us out on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We've got an email address, which I think Frank knows off the top of his head.
ToyPowerPodcast@gmail.com. It's all Toy Power Podcast. It's really easy.
Yeah, mate. Just remember that. You're in.
Remember the name of the show. You'll find us.
So, if you've got any questions or any topics you want discussed, write in, leave us a post, And yeah, if you want to come on the show as well, we might have some slots for some people at some stage. So
special guests.
It'd be great to have you on board. So see you next time.
Awesome. Cheers, guys.
Thanks, guys. And also, if you there's a certain character out there that you want us to spotlight, shout it out. Like there's plenty of characters out there in the toy universe and such. So shout it out if you think that one character beams above everyone else and you want us to have our opinions and things heard.
Preferably not a yellow one.
Yeah, we're done with yellow. Thank Power you for listening. Loader. Yeah, I could talk aliens all day. So, yeah. Cheers for listening.